Hello, everybody. I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Craig. Honored and privileged to be here tonight, this evening, this morning, depending where you are. And thank you for the technology and AA traffic delay. If you didn't notice, I came a minute or two late. Had a prompt computer update, so I appreciate that. And thank you, everybody in here, for your service. I just wanted to touch real quick on the pamphlet that was referenced. First of all, I'm sorry, a couple stats to get out of the way. Sobriety dates, November 28th, 1998. I have a sponsor and a service sponsor. Those who are unfamiliar with service sponsorship, it's someone who guides you, in my experience, guides you through the traditions and the concepts, as well as the general service structure outside of the home group and inside of the AA group. And I have the honor and the privilege to both sponsor and service sponsor. The pamphlet that was referenced, P45, Circles of Love and Service, is one of the smallest, briefest, simplest, most functional, haha, the topic, pamphlet that we have. Very simple, very functional. And it essentially talks to us about the services at the local level. It helps us distinguish the difference between the groups, the district, the area, the general service conference, even touches briefly on intergroup central offices. We have intergroups and central offices which have existed long before the General Service Conference structure. However, they are not part of the General Service Conference structure, but they are absolutely and vitally important inside Alcoholics Anonymous, but we fall in different roles. Wouldn't say the pamphlet's going to get into as much detail as I do, but it gives you a synopsis of the AA group and how you can have a representative and participate in that communication through the upside down triangle, each of the conduits of communication, GSR, DCM, delegate, the conference, the board, to the groups. In my experience, just to touch on the fact of cooperation with intergroups and central offices, I've found an area and or district functions most effectively when they have obviously, a healthy general service structure, but also a healthy relationship with the intergroups and central offices. When we're doing public information work together, when we're doing correction work together, when we're helping each other on literature, if someone calls the area and doesn't have a big book available, hey, why don't you call such and such an intergroup or central office? Or when intergroup is on the front lines and people are coming in and connecting and asking about these things, they're fully informed. It's a delegate's job, in my experience, in my opinion, to keep that intergroup fully informed because the intergroup central office is the front lines and normally sees the A member way before the General Service Conference structure does. So why not keep them up to speed, up to date, so they're informed, almost like a representative outside the structure. Also, in my experience, districts and areas cooperate effectively when they allow an intergroup liaison. So you might have an area assembly and or an area committee meeting where you have the intergroup liaison available to give a report and share information about what the intergroup and central office is up to, where the money's going, what services are available, et cetera, et cetera. Same thing at the district level. I've seen in some districts where they don't have a literature committee, they allow the intergroup to take care of the literature for them, but they're not a part of the district committee, but they come and they report and they sit in and they make literature accessible to the AA member. Like anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, we do it in various ways, but we all follow the same 36 principles. We hopefully follow the same 36 principles. We hopefully follow the same 36 principles, Ed. So that's my experience, kind of trying to bring Circles of Love and Service alive. It's also very useful to be able to get the word out to the local groups who, again, in my experience, it's not the only way it's done, but in my experience, when we have AA members in the local groups answering the phones rather than a hotline. And I've lived in areas where a hotline do it and where they don't. And I'm not, that's their decision. But one of the most effective service committees I've seen is when I lived in a particular area and somebody went around through the whole year and groups took a week time slot. At 52 weeks in the year, and gathered different groups to take the time slot, and they answered the phones, after hours, and you had the opportunity to be of service, whether it was 3 in the morning or 8 at night. And an alcoholic and or someone calling on behalf of alcoholic had an AA member to talk to, so it was definitely 12-step work. And we can't expect folks in the general service conference structure to learn about intergroup and central office if we don't have someone to talk to. And we can't expect people in the intergroup central office to learn about general service if they don't have someone to talk to. And that's essentially what Tradition 9 is, directly responsible to those we serve. You could go very shallow on that principle, and you can go a very, you know, long range, wide open vision. How are we being responsible to those we serve? Because even though I'm not necessarily involved in the intergroup or central office, and maybe I'm a delegate at the time or an area chairperson or something, I still need to be responsible to those I serve and trying to help bridge that gap. And I have personal experience with that. I've lived in an area where there wasn't really communication and the intergroup in the area wasn't working together. And I certainly took that role because I felt, based on my experience in previous areas, that was something beneficial to everybody. I've seen where it's almost like Bloods and Crips, you know, like people are, you know, fighting over whose territory it is to carry the message, which just seems really silly to me. You can get a lot more done when we're working together, when we have luncheons together, when we cooperate together, we learn from each other. Plus, we forget sometimes the outside world sees us in a professional light. If we don't have an email that they could regularly have access to, if there's not always a person in a role to call, you know, that kind of puts a bad taste in people in the outside world's perspective. And if you got two different people saying two different things from two different entities in the same city, it's very confusing, but yet you're both saying you're AA. So it's really a public information thing, if you think about it too, to kind of make sure we're on the up and up and working together. Not to mention the common welfare doesn't just apply to the General Service Conference structure. You know, it applies to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So why wouldn't we want to be inclusive in that conversation? There's also, you know, when we were updating the AA service manual not too long ago, why wouldn't we want to consult the over 483 intergroups and central offices when we're writing the section on the intergroups and central offices? Why wouldn't we want some of their experience to be shared? If we're updating a pamphlet, if we're writing some service material, why wouldn't we want to hear from the folks that are actually facilitating and working within that realm? So that's just a little synopsis of the Circles of Love and Service, because I know that's your pamphlet of the month or the literature of the year or whatever, literature of the moment. The literature I like specifically to use when it comes to traditions is actually the book Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book. If you've heard me before, you hear that I always say service and recovery are not separate. And sometimes we do kind of have some camps that are like, well, I'm on the front lines, I'm doing the big book, I'm not with those service people. And then the service people are like, oh, I'm not those big book people, and they're so crazy and conformist. And it's really fascinating because logically it's all in the same book. You can go ahead and find the recovery process through the 12 steps as outlined in X amount of chapters, but you'll also find the traditions. I think when I logged on tonight, somebody was actually reading page 561. Maybe I'm incorrect, but I am correct. Okay. So it was reading in the back of the big book, which is where the traditions start, and you have your short and your long form, excuse me, and a little summation on unity. And then when you go to 574 and 575, you have the concepts, and you have a whole bunch of other fun stuff too, things that you had no idea you'd ever be talking about in life until you came to AA, such as the Lasker Award. Like, what the heck is a Lasker Award? You know, you could find that in the back of the book, the medical view on AA, the religious view on AA. It's actually really interesting stuff. When you turn to the medical view on AA, you'll find doctors way back when it was not cool to be associated with Alcoholics Anonymous or alcoholism talking about the best solution we have for some of our clients is AA. Fascinating reference from the medical community. So lots of stuff in the big book besides the doctor's opinion. And please, please, whatever you do, do not be afraid to go past page 106 in the big book. You will be okay, I promise you. In fact, you may have an additional spiritual experience. I promise you that. You get into those later chapters, you get into the stories. Oh my God, you might identify, you might connect, you might grow. And then you have the stuff in the back we're talking about, which connects and unites us all. Another book I enjoy has been very helpful to me in my journey in AA period, but also in the 12 Traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. And to be honest with you, recovery and service as well, is the book Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age. Actually, they have some really fascinating stories about recovery in the beginning and then after the Unity chapter. Although it's not really outlined as the concepts yet, they still have some really good stuff in the back about the alcoholic ego, about service, you know, whether it's necessary, if it is, you know, we should take care of it. Then you also have Language of the Heart, which is definitely a game changer. Definitely a lot of articles that were written in the early days, specifically by one of our co-founders. And, you know, just shared experience about what these traditions are. When you look at page 118 of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous Comes of Age, it states the short form, excuse me, Tradition 9 states, AA as such ought never be organized. We may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. This one still puzzles a lot of people. How can you have a society that is unorganized and at the same time organize services? It's so funny. This is how important sponsorship is, in my experience. Alcoholics are some of the most crafty, charismatic, intelligent, creative, manipulative, controlling. I'm just kidding. Well, I'm not kidding, but you know what I mean. Very, very interesting and crafty people. But when it comes to arrogance, we really take the cake, right? Like we would tell an entire room, just because a secretary happens to have a folder, because we haven't been service sponsored, we don't have experience with the traditions, we would tell that secretary, what are you doing? We're not organized. Totally not what we're talking about here. That's not what Tradition 9 means. We're talking about organized in the conventional sense, such as a government or something centralized of that, or a corporation. trying to make some light here, but we do that. We talk about stuff we don't know rather than get the guidance to know it. There was a woman in my home group, my old home group. We had a wonderful group, over 600 years of sobriety easily in that group on any given night. I mean, old timers, like you wouldn't even believe the amount of old timers. You would think I was lying if I told you how many were there. And woman shared, we had a group conscience every quarter that we have a service speaker share their experience, Strength and Hope on the Traditions and Concepts. And, you know, the chairperson at that time forgot to get the speaker or whatever. So chose, I'll leave the name out of it, we're being recording, but chose so-and-so to share. And she carried a message so powerful, even though she didn't have service experience. And here's why. And this, she literally did this right on the spot right here. She had been sober well over 30 years. And she said, I never went to the district meeting, even though I heard about the district meeting for so long. I heard about the general service structure for so long. I never went because I was terrified to admit I didn't know what it was. And I didn't have the humility to ask for help. That's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that has existed in AA, that was actively, quote unquote, working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is a real deal problem in my experience. And this has everything to do with Tradition 9. I'm going to show you how this simply and functionally collaborates with Tradition 9 in a minute. But I believe we have a major problem with this in Alcoholics Anonymous, probably in the world at hand, but we're not talking about that, right? How many times do we not do something because we're afraid we're not number one? Or we're afraid what someone's going to think, or we're afraid to ask for help, or we're afraid we're going to be wrong. The reason it relates to Tradition 9 is because if a group is being responsible to those they served, and they're taking the time to help inform their members. I always quote the AA group pamphlet. It says where it all begins, or at least it's supposed to be, right? So the question I always have to ask myself with regards to my own group, is all of Alcoholics Anonymous in my group, is this where it all begins? Are we discussing and practically applying the 12 steps in Alcoholics Anonymous in our format? Are we illustrating, conveying, and communicating practically the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 concepts of world service? In our business meetings, are we actively having discussions and making decisions based on steps, traditions, and concepts? Are these principles guiding our decisions, guiding our discussions? When we have problems or problematic situations, are we using these principles to solve and revolve our situations? I mean, I don't know. Are we? So that's a questions that I think is really relevant, really important when we're considering being directly responsible to those they serve. Because you could go off a cliff with that statement. Being directly responsible to those they serve, we could check someone's shoelaces when they come in so they don't trip. You know what I mean? We could make sure their car doors are locked before they come in. That's not what we're talking about in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're directly responsible to those they serve in relation to the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. So what's the first thing we need? This is what Tradition 9 tells me, even though it doesn't say it. It tells me that we need to be fully informed of Alcoholics Anonymous, what it does, what it doesn't do, where it is, how to get a hold of it, you know, what its steps are, what its recovery message is. We need to be confident and firm in the primary purpose. We need to understand the General Service Conference structure, be a part of the General Service Conference structure. A meeting is just one tiny function of an AA group. An AA meeting is one tiny, tiny function of an AA group. The AA group is so much bigger and has a so much more profound impact on the community when operating within the guides of the conference structure and the principles. Can do public information work, CPC work, hold workshops, elect the GSR, invite the DCM, take a group inventory, et cetera, et cetera. And I can go on and on and on. But again, that's being directly responsible to those we serve. We're not just serving the person we like that looks like us in front of us that we see every night at 8. We're also serving the people we don't know, we don't see, doesn't look like us, might not be currently reached, might not even be thought of. I never forget, I got asked to speak at the Greater Toronto area. I forget what the function was, but I believe it was in like May or something. I guess it doesn't matter. But I heard one of their committees talk about carrying the message to the alcoholic with Down syndrome. I had 23 years sober at the time, so about 2 years ago. I had already served in 4 general service conferences, sponsored tons of people, did workshops, been all the world for AA, met all kinds of people, had a pretty good understanding of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I can assure you, carrying the message to the alcoholic with Down syndrome was not on my radar. And I love when somebody puts something that's not on my radar. I love when they burst my bubble because it means we're doing something. That's being directly responsible to those we serve, because we serve alcoholics in whatever capacity that means. I understand resources matter. I get it. I understand not every group can afford to just have an ASL interpreter standing by ready. I get all that. Ideally, we want to be directly responsible to those we serve. Now, I gave you kind of a little bit of a vision of Tradition 9 in that capacity, but what I believe it was intended to convey in the principle was, as it states in the long form, having service boards and committees, and how we serve the fellowship and serve the General Service Conference structure and serve the organization as a whole by having these boards and committees. But even those, we have to take regular inventory. There's nothing more fascinating to me than an ad hoc committee, which is supposed to be designed to find out how we could more effectively carry the message to the Native American community, the indigenous people in our backyards that we forgot about, or how we can help, you know, those with, excuse me, accessibility issues, whatever. We have those committees, but we never invite someone with an accessibility issue or a Native American to sit on that committee, or a young person if it's a young person. Like, and I shouldn't say never. I'm saying I often see us not inviting the very people we're trying to serve. You can't be directly responsible to those you serve without communication. I'll give you an example. I know there's at least one parent in here. Try being directly responsible to your child without communicating. Try being directly responsible to your child without asking them what they need, how they feel, what's going on. Doesn't mean everything they say they're going to get. Just like every member makes a request to a group doesn't mean we fulfill every request, but we hear, we operate, we function very simply in the guides of the 36 principles. Am I okay with zero status? Am I okay with being a part of? I have a lot of questions written on the side of my A Comes of Age and Language of the Heart. And some of them you might say at first glance, superficially, what does it have to do with the tradition at hand? It talks about universal key. Universal respect is the key in the long form of tradition nine. But am I okay with zero status? Because it's only when I engage in how I look, concerned with how others will view me, whether or not I'm in charge, getting the credit I need, it's those individual defects that get in the way of my usefulness as an individual on the committee. But it's also what, you know, personalities is essentially we call it, what gets in the way of a committee functioning effectively in my experience. Do I understand the paradox that there are no musts in AA? The fact that no human has authority. I love the argument about there being no musts in AA because there's always an individual that carries a blue book that looks like mine that says, what do you mean? There's 100 and blank musts. My sponsor said so. I said, that's wonderful, except there's no musts in Alcoholics Anonymous with respect to becoming an AA member. My experience is if you want what we have, then there are some musts. But there's no must to be an AA member. And we need to remember that in service. Who do we serve? When we take a service position, who do we serve? We serve the fellowship as a whole. We serve the person to your left, the person to your right, your sponsor, your sponsee, the person you haven't met yet, the community at hand. I mean, you can go far and say God, right? But essentially, excuse me, no human has authority. So where do we get authority in Alcoholics Anonymous? Through the informed group conscience. If Tradition 2 was a very fine-looking person and Tradition 9 was a very fine-looking person, Tradition 2 and 9 got together and they married and they recreated a bunch of little good-looking people called the 12 Concepts. Because when you have the informed group conscience, the elected leader versus the self-appointed leader, the rotating leadership versus the stay in a position for 15-year leadership, and then the traditions in between, and then being directly responsible via our committee and service boards, etc. There's the concepts right in front of us. What I really like in Tradition 9, oh, and I'll say one other thing too. Do I bask? I love the poetry that God graced me with here. Do I bask in self-praise or am I open and unified with group participation? Listen, I know some of you respect me a little bit and call me up sometimes and think I have a little bit to offer, and I appreciate that. And I think I do also, but I am alcoholic. And if I don't work these steps, even self-sacrifice and unselfish, quote-unquote, trusted servant roles for me become about self-praise. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't buy the whole you can't destroy AA. You absolutely can, which is why I think you need to take it serious. Sure, you may not single-handedly bring it down, but is my behavior harming Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole? And it starts with basic 12-step work and inventory. If I'm caring more about the praise I get than actually facilitating the message or working with others, because here's the thing. If you want to know whether you're in decent spiritual condition, now take this with a grain of salt, I'm just an individual, but if you want to know if you're in decent spiritual condition, ask yourself how you're getting along with your home group. How are you getting along with the committee you're serving on, the district, the area, whatever that might be. You know, and you're allowed to disagree. You're allowed to have your own opinion. I'm not saying that. In fact, I support you to think differently. But what I'm talking about is how am I functioning within this committee? How am I working with this committee? Is there an open line of communication? Sure, you may be able to talk to them whenever you want, but do they feel safe enough to talk to you and work with you? And believe me, I have experience with that in both ways. And I couldn't see for years, like, you know, I'm just a small little marshmallow with a big heart, just trying to help people. But sometimes I come off a little rough and tough, I guess. And it could be intimidating and whatever. And you know, I'm not aware of that all the time. And so I need to work on that, take it to the next level. But getting back to the question at hand, I need to be praising everybody else. I mean, I need to find a way as a leader to help people grow, not bash them and talk about how they stink and they're not doing anything. Now, let's not confuse that with if somebody's not showing up for their commitment, let's reach out and try to carry the message. Something going on, something I can help with. Want you a part of this committee. You're important to us. You know, be there for them. Like, because if we can't carry the message to our own committee members, then who are we going to carry the message to? However, if they don't respond, they're not interested, you know, then the common welfare takes precedent and we need to get back to business here and carrying the message. So I'm not saying be pseudo spiritual and be a carpet, but I mean, we need to find a way to make sure we're working, you know, well with our committee. Do I lead by example? Do I lead by example? There's nothing like a district committee member waving a bunch of flyers around telling everybody about how they have to go to this event and that event, and they don't go to the event themselves. Am I working this program myself? Am I spending the time to learn the structure? And do I read the guidelines of my role? Before I get into my role, do I understand what that role is and what's expected of me? Do I communicate with a sponsor and a service sponsor? Do I have one? You know, do I show up for things? You know, when people are watching and not watching, can they tell I'm trying my best to put principles first? Nobody's perfect. Do I practice that of an elder statesman, or am I a divisive, bleeding deacon? And I love tradition 9 in Comes of Age because it tells you very clearly the difference between an elder statesman and a bleeding deacon. I remember years ago, I was at a particular group, and everybody would always give credit to these two old timers that sat in the back of the room with their legs crossed during a business meeting. Never said anything. And they always said, you should be like so and so. Why? They don't participate. Sitting there with your legs crossed and not doing anything is not humility, in my experience. Participating and let us know what your experience is. Let us know how you got through a problem or what concern you see. Let us know how you think we could better carry the message in the prison or how we can better spend the money in public information. And then stepping aside and letting the group decide. To me, that's an elder statesman. Sitting back and saying, oh, I'll let the group figure it out. That's not an elder statesman. That's lazy. My opinion only, folks. Don't have to buy it. But a bleeding deacon, unfortunately, I do have some experience with that as well. And that is a corrosive thread. Can really cause a lot of harm. Listen, I'll be the first to tell you, recorded or not, sometimes some situations need to be aired out. Not punitively and not personality, but sometimes you need to say this is inappropriate and we need to talk about this as a group. And I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about at the diner behind the scenes, bashing stuff, you know, bashing people rather, complaining all the time, or how about even making stuff up that's not true to try to make someone look bad. We've all done it. I can tell you I've honestly done it. And I've made amends for it. And I don't do it anymore. Certainly controlling at times, but I don't engage to the level that I just displayed, but or just mentioned. Can't bring the solution till we know the problem. So I like what it says in here because here, I'll just read it. Where did it go? Oh, here we go. The elder statesman is one who sees the wisdom of the group's decision, who holds no resentment over his reduced status, whose judgment, fortified by considerable experience, is sound, and who is willing to sit quietly on the sidelines, patiently awaiting developments. Now, this is all after participation. The elder statesman doesn't just walk in and do nothing and wait for developments. He participates. It goes on to describe, like, the importance of, you know, being informed and communicating, expressing, and then stepping aside, being a part of that informed group conscience. Have to be very careful of self-righteousness. It's hard to communicate what the ninth tradition asks us to do in a simple or functional capacity if we're wrapped up in self-righteousness. I had the opportunity this weekend. It was a non-AA event, but I had the opportunity to talk about the General Service Conference structure in front of a bunch of lawyers at the Lawyer Assistance Program retreat. And some A members were there, some non-A members were there, and you just, when you, if you've done public information work, CPC work, like, of course, working with a sponsee or sharing at a meeting or carrying the message in the treatment center is potent and important and useful, but you just feel how sacred the A message is and the traditions are when you're talking in public and you're talking to professionals. You know, you want to be very careful of, you know, what you say and how you communicate and what's put out there, and again, being directly responsible to those you serve, and what an honor it is to carry that sacred torch, if you will. Going on with that point, why would we elect someone to be our public information chairperson when they don't have a service sponsor, when they're not informed of the 12 traditions, they're not informed of the 12 concepts, and/or they don't show any desire to do so? Now, some AA members take offense to that. Well, who are you to tell someone they can or cannot participate? And it's a fair question, except for when the group decides that, not when I decide that. And we did that with a, like, our correctional facility. I was an advisory to this particular committee a couple of years ago with a couple other people. And we created a volunteer form, which I loved it. I loved it. The volunteer form asked you, do you have a sponsor? Do you have a service sponsor? Do you have a home group? What's your experience in carrying the message? Are you informed of the 12 traditions and 12 concepts? If you're not informed, are you willing to learn them? And when they filled out their form and we interviewed them, Craig, what? How? Why are you interviewing people whether or not they can participate? Because they're going to go in front of people in custody that may never see an A message other than what you send them. They're going to be in front of professionals that deal with members all the time. So you only get one shot sometimes. So why would we not? Why would we settle? And I understand, because right now you can barely get someone to open the door and make coffee. Wonder why that is. We could do another workshop another day. I have a few things on that. I'd like that one to not be recorded, though. But I definitely have a few thoughts on that. But here's the other side of us telling no to a member. The most important thing we did wasn't that we weeded out the folks that were informed on A or not. That wasn't the most important thing we did. The most important thing we did is when we told somebody no, we invited them to join our committee. We invited them to read the corrections workbook with us, to read the traditions and concepts with us, and to learn. So we brought a solution. We didn't just say, no, have a nice day. No, go on another committee. We said, no, but we want you. No, but we want to work with you. No, but we want you to be the future of this committee. And that's how we functioned. And I think, to be honest with you, if I can say so myself, I think that's how most of our committees should function. So getting back to what I was saying, being directly responsible to us, why would we want, if you are not fully informed on our anonymity tradition, why would we elect you to facilitate public information? And I'll be honest with you, if the role is empty, I'd rather it be empty than to have someone who doesn't understand our fellowship and organization. Because the DCM can always still make things accessible within that district committee and connect them with other districts or areas rather than, you know, put the message out there that's confusing. Because we put people in front of public sometimes and they're mixing alcohol and drugs, and that's not what we do. And then people are confused. Oh, just send them to AA. AA is better. Which, by the way, isn't always true. There's a lot of other things other 12-step organizations are doing that we need to learn from. And there's a lot of things that they're doing better than us, in my opinion. I've seen it with my own eyes. But somehow, I guess we think we're top-notch. But we were here first, for sure. Doesn't mean we're always top-notch. The other thing we're still trying to figure out as an organization, I think, how we feel about anonymity. I'm going a little off topic here, couldn't help it, but we really need to start having communications. Instead of arguing about all the silly stuff we argue about at the district and the area or the intergroup, let's talk about our principles. Let's create some new literature. How do we really feel about this in the digital age, technology? What does anonymity really mean? You know, what does anonymity mean to you? I mean, I feel I'm in a different world than a lot of us, even those that I respect. Like, it took me forever to get on social media, as some of you know, and I'm on social media now, but you won't find anything anywhere near Alcoholics Anonymous on my social media page. Nowhere. Not even close. And I'm not going to post the number 25 next month either. I'm going to tell you why. Because you can argue that if I put the number 25, I'm not hurting anybody. And you can argue that it's my personal choice. But here's what I have to say to that argument. It's called the Understanding Anonymity Pamphlet. And it speaks very clearly to a couple of points. A, number one, I guess you could be A number one, right? A number one, anonymity is about equality. It's hard to be equal when we have different rules for different folks. The number one reason for anonymity in my experience is equality. And you don't hear that mentioned much. The other thing, it's not your personal choice to break your anonymity at the public level. Yes, legally, constitutionally, I get it. You'd win in court every day. But spiritually, when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous is crystal clear, 100% anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. Period. Point blank. Bill wrote a letter years ago. He said, there's no room for interpretation on two of our principles. Step one, you're either drinking or you're not. And tradition 11, you're either anonymous at the public level or you're not. There's no room for interpretation. Here's an even bigger one. It tells us very specifically in Understanding Anonymity that we're supposed to protect our fellow members' anonymity. If I post the number 25, you and I both know there's going to be 132 people writing about Alcoholics Anonymous. If I know that, why would I post the number? But Craig, it's going to help so many people. I am not going to argue because I know there was definitely somebody somewhere at some point that saw the number 25 and their friend said, hey, I'm sober now, and they got help. I got it. I get it. And I'm glad they got help, and I'm never going to argue that. I'm never getting to that. But what I will argue is, what service position do you have? How many big books did you put in libraries? How many correctional facilities have you been speaking in? How many people in our community know where A is, where it is, and what it does? Because then we don't need to post the number 25. It's going to be functioning very simply and very spiritually, much like the title of the workshop today. Maybe it's a theory. That's my experience. But regardless of who's right or wrong on that debate, principles before personalities. I've seen these principles come to fruition when we practice them. I can tell you, I only just got social media in February of 2023. So what's that, 8 months? I'm not going to say this in recording, but if you want to know my resume and my track record offline, I'll be happy to share it with you. I didn't need social media for that. And the groups and stuff that I participated in didn't need social media for that. Now, please don't mistake me or misquote me. We absolutely need to be present on social media. But publishing our principles, and Alcoholics Anonymous should be present on social media. Craig doesn't need to be present on behalf of Alcoholics Anonymous. Jessica, Jane, Jody, whomever. And here's another interesting thing. I'm giving you some things to think about because we need things to talk about, right? We need discussions to base we need principles to base our discussions in. We can even have a very fair discussion about what we're doing right now. Zoom is on a social media platform, and it could easily be recorded, and there could be a face and a last name. And then we can get into what platform this is. And, you know, sometimes, you know, people post numbers and last names and this and that. I'm not even going to take an opinion on it, but it's just another thing that we should be talking about as we move. What am I talking about move? We've been in the technology and digital age for years, but as we continue to function, and I mean, the internet, geez, what was that, like the 80s? Like, I mean, come on. These are the things we should be talking about rather than arguing who's going to put the chairs in a circle. You know what I mean? Or whether we're going to have, you know, salami or ham with the snacks at intermission. Like, Trish and Nine, in the long form, and I'll wrap the last whatever I got here. What do I got? 10, 11, 12 minutes? Just going based on the long form of what it says in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just really hope I inspire, whether I know you, I don't know you, whatever. I just really hope I inspire you, if you're already doing it, re-inspire you if you're not doing, to have discussions based on these principles. And guess what? If your group doesn't have these principles yet, well, then start bringing them to discussion. Hey, for 5 or 10 minutes at the group, can we read out of the group pamphlet every business meeting? You know, hey, can we do a tradition and a concept each month? Hey, our business meetings are on a virtual platform, so can we invite an outside speaker that has experience at the General Service Conference to just talk a little bit of the importance of a GSR? We have a DCM come facilitate our group inventory. Like, help the group get connected to AA as a whole. Each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of a large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. Now, this is where it gets interesting. At the beginning of this group, for those who are not well-informed or new to the traditions, if I told you that I was going to talk a little bit about seven tradition and contributions in tradition nine, you would probably say I was nuts. But when you read here, the trustees of the General Service Board are, in effect, our A General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our A tradition and the receivers of voluntary A contributions by which we maintain our General Service Office at New York. One of the biggest myths that you hear on a regular basis in your group is that you're going to make a donation, and I'm saying donation intentionally. I prefer you use the C word, contribution, to the General Service Office. It's not accurate. You're not making a contribution to the General Service Office. You never have. You're making a contribution to the General Service Board for services provided by the General Service Office. Wow, who cares, Craig? It's not a big deal. It's a couple of letters. It's actually one letter. Well, it is a big deal. Because other than somebody who accidentally said that, if you understand our conference structure, and it doesn't mean you're better if you do, but just like if we were talking steps and I told you to take inventory on the second step, you would correct me because that's not the route we're going. We need to, you know, come to believe and blah, 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 right? The board, the 21 trustees, 14 alcoholic, 7 non-alcoholic, and the committees, AWS, the board, A Grapevine, and the committees on AWS and the board and how they function within the General Service Office and the Grapevine and how those committees function, the delegates committees and the trustees committees and how it operates through our whole upside down triangle, and it operates just like it illustrates in the circles of love and service. That statement nullifies that whole experience, which in sense is tradition nine, directly responsible to those we serve. Where does the A dollar go? You're not going to know that if you don't listen to the treasurer's report. You don't participate in a business meeting. You don't ask the district, the area, General Service Board treasurer, etc. And there's a lot of checks and balances there too. There's trustees have the legal authority to do whatever they need to, and you guys have the spiritual authority to no longer send contributions. I believe there should be communication first in there. We don't just stop sending contributions because we don't like what we're hearing. But I'm just saying there's checks and balances. The legal versus the spiritual. A lot of the times you hear people complain about what the delegate's doing, or you'll hear complain about the DCM or complain about the board. Well, you're the ones who elected them. You're the ones who voted them. Hopefully you didn't tell them they were GSR when they got back from the bathroom. That's not exactly being directly responsible to those we serve, are we? It's my experience. I'm not afraid for something to be open. I'm not. I don't need to rush to fill it. I want it to be effective. A lot of the time it's ego. Conventions, we got to sell t-shirts. We got to sell Red Bull because we need to have a lot of money and show everybody that our convention did well. Listen, if you go back to your area and you report that you have a $10,000 surplus at your convention, I think that's a bad thing. I think you overcharged your members. Just my perspective. You may disagree with that, but that's just my perspective. The point I'm getting at here is we don't want to ask. Like, I don't like nominations at the group. And again, just take me with a grain of salt, but here's why. If you're in a large group like me, or especially the groups I used to participate in, and you say, oh, I'm going to nominate D to be GSR. Now D has to look at 150 people and say no. She's not going to say no. She's going to say, yeah, yeah, I'll be GSR. Absolutely. Can't wait to help. Or, yeah, I got this. Doesn't know the time capacity, doesn't know the commitment, doesn't know the traditions, et cetera. You know, I'm not suggesting D doesn't, I'm just saying. You know, so we don't put that person in a place to succeed, you know? And when we elect someone right when they come back from the bathroom, it's just not effective. Anyway, I'm gonna move through the Tradition 9 long form. It also talks about the grapevine and being in, you know, General Service Office being authorized to handle the public relations along with AWS and the Grapevine Board with the principal newsletter, et cetera, et cetera. And then it says all such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. Next time someone tells you there are no leaders in Alcoholics Anonymous, you can go to page 565 in the long form of Tradition 9 and you could read, for true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced servants of the whole. Experience is all we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's all we have. They drive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. Listen, I'm a passionate individual. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Whether I'm calling a guy at a treatment center in Bismarck, North Dakota, I'm doing the workshop tonight, I'm at the lawyer's thing, I'm working with a sponsee, I'm calling my sponsor. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I sweat and bleed AA. I still got a life. I do plenty of things. I go to a ton of events. I hang out with my family, hang out with the dogs, go in the pool, go for walks. I got a full life. I'm very grateful for everything Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me, has relieved me of the mental obsession, has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I was nothing until Alcoholics Anonymous. So just simply and functionally, it's my duty to want to learn Alcoholics Anonymous, to give to Alcoholics Anonymous, to see what I could do to be more effective with Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my duty. But today, you know, 2023, you know, September, October, whatever month it is, I want to. A lot of times people want to be in the know. And I heard a trustee say the same thing recently. I so identify with it. Everybody wants to be in the know. Everybody wants to be in the know. I promise you, if you knew some of the things I knew, your heart would be broke. It'd be shattered into pieces. Let's stay involved. Let's take a look at what we can do better. Let's, you know, take inventories at our group as individuals. Let's look at, I know I'm kind of parading here a little, but like, it's, if you're watching, it's hard to get anyone to do anything in 2023. We have to ask ourselves, why is that? Why are people not staying at the district meeting? We're not doing something right. Something's not right. And we have to lay aside our personal ambitions and somebody thinking we did something bad and just look at what's not working so we can create change. Bill said it a long time ago. If AA was to die, it was going to die from within. And I stay up. Again, this is something, so I don't like being recorded, but I'll just share this with you. Like, I stay up some nights, like all night, like not sleeping, just looking at that service manual and wondering, what can we do? Like, what's going on? Like, why are we not attractive more and keeping more people in service? How can we sponsor better? How can we be more effective? You know, and maybe some things do need to change that I'm so rigid about, and I think we need, but when can we have these discussions, you know? And I don't feel silly about that because I did whatever I had to do to drink. I did whatever I had to do, drive multiple states, put a gun in your mouth, whatever I needed to do to drink, I did. So now I'm not going to put a gun in your mouth to get you involved in service, but whatever I need to do to be involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever I need to do to be helpful and useful. And, you know, we're going to be misunderstood sometimes. I mean, you know, we're not all going to understand each other. But if we could just take the time to have those discussions and hear each other and find out what might work best for us. I mean, that's essentially what Tradition 9 is saying. You know, we want to hear from the alcoholic we haven't met yet. We want to hear from the alcoholic who came for the first time. We want to work with the members that are within our committee. And the principle applies all through the General Service Conference structure. We play a major role in how Alcoholics Anonymous operates. And I'll end with this. Like, listen, every single role up and down the Alcoholics Anonymous service structure, from people that work at the General Service Office, people that are on the General Service Board, delegates, area officers, district officers, they all come from a home group, with the exception of the non-alcoholic trustees. Like, everybody comes from an AA group. So what are we doing at the AA group? And why are we so ashamed to talk about those other 24 principles? Why are we so ashamed to talk about them when it's who we are? So anyways, thank you for the opportunity to share. I hope I was useful and inspiring. Thanks for the invite.